Good morning. I can't tell you how flattered I am that you've all came here to hear me speak this morning. Thank you so much. It means a lot. My name is Adam. I am the youth director here. Here we go. We live in a hurried, fast-paced world that does not like to wait. Our food is fast. Our attention spans short. Our memories are fading, some of us more rapidly than others. Our patience is thin, our schedules are packed, our energy is low, and our happiness is often elusive. We have all the information in the world at our fingertips, yet we're bored. We're sleepwalking. At least most of us are, too numb to care, too overwhelmed to act, too scared to risk. And here we are, in a church of all places, talking about Advent and waiting. Waiting like Black Friday shoppers for a line to open. Waiting in traffic. Waiting for our kids to finally get buckled in. Waiting for food in the drive-thru line. Waiting for your sister who's always late. Waiting. But beneath it all, in the small still moments between work and home, the front door and the bed, we wait for something else, something more, something real. Because we've been marketed to for so long now, we thought we had learned to spot a fake. It turns out the only thing worse than being duped by a fake, an actor, someone or something that pretends to be something but isn't, the only thing worse than that is the terrible realization that we're all fakes in one way or another. Even the news can act a little bit these days. So we wait. And we all know, don't we? We know that somewhere deep, deep, deep down, all the things we chase or buy won't fulfill us. And all the awards handed out by this system are tainted at best, and all the Christmas lights in the world can't shine enough light to scare away this dark, dark feeling that it just all doesn't really seem to matter that much. We've all signed the contract. We've gotten the membership card that gives us a discount if we remember to bring it. So we wait. And this is Advent. A forced waiting. A time to look around and ask, from whence will hope actually come? Or maybe does hope have better places to be? He doesn't seem to be in a hurry. That's for sure. But perhaps, just perhaps, hope doesn't like to send itself through Amazon Prime. Maybe hope isn't in a hurry because if it was, it wouldn't be hope. Maybe hope has more to say than 140 characters. So we wait. So what do we do in the meantime? Isn't it strange in this world of sound bites and fake news that movies seem to be getting longer? The book sales continue to grow. We don't like to wait, but we do like a good story, don't we? If anything, it helps to pass the time. So when C.S. Lewis was an atheist, he often talked with his friend J.R.R. Tolkien, the author of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, about all the great stories and fairy tales that he loved. He often grew sad when he had to admit, these are only fairy tales. They're not real, even though he desperately wanted them to be. In response, Tolkien would often press Lewis as to where this desire for a real story came from. He suggested to Lewis that all these stories he loved, they must have a root story, a beginning story, a story that is the genesis of all other stories. And he pointed him to the Bible, to this story. Tolkien would tell him this, and he would say, this is a story told by the author of the universe, a story in which the author himself would enter in the most unlikely of ways. As a little baby in a little town to a little family. And Lewis came to realize, we're not that much different than the Israelites of long ago, who once huddled around the words of Moses, drawn into stories of love and betrayal, miracle and wonder, arcs and floods, giants and slings, kingdoms and kings. Like them, we wait for something, something we can't even fully understand, something the storyteller hints and points at in the shadows. Whispers of a liberator, rumors of one who can set us free. He is nameless, but one day people will bear his name. But not yet. Hope is not in a hurry. Hope, it turned out, wanted to try diapers. And while it's true that one day he will heal the sick, steel hearts and storms die a horrible death, and when the story seems to be over, rise again, that's not where we are in the story. So we wait. And we look. And we ask, why like this? Why something that would take so long? Why something that could be so easily ignored? Why something that could be so quickly commercialized and sold? Maybe that's part of the miracle, that despite our best efforts, we haven't ruined it yet. The avalanche of presents and carols and doorbuster sales haven't been able to drown out the sound of that little baby crying, of that scared teenager clutching her baby like it's the most important thing in the world, because it turns out it actually is. That's part of the miracle, but it's not all of it. The other part is almost too much to bear. God, hope himself, came down. Not just in a way that was shocking, but in a way that was frankly embarrassing. So very un-godlike, so vulnerable, so small. If this is who God is, who in God's name does he expect me to be? If this is the kind of thing God gets himself into, what sort of appalling messes is he asking me to get into? And what drives that kind of love? Love that doesn't seem to care about power or popularity. Love that is willing to put the fate of the universe in the hands of teenagers. Love that apparently has no depths to which it won't stoop and no lengths to which it won't go. Is this what he expects of me? Is this real, what we're doing? Is it maybe the real thing I've been looking for my whole life? We'd ask him, but he can't speak yet. So we wait and we watch. We watch shepherds so dirty they're not allowed inside the temple, so untrustworthy they're not allowed to testify in court, become the first messengers, the first preachers and pastors of this strange God's arrival. We watch as the armies of heaven put down their swords and pick up their songbooks and become a choir. We watch as stars become tour guides. We watch as strangers from foreign lands bring gifts fit for a king. What does a baby need frankincense for? What is frankincense? We watch a king so terrified of this little baby that he murders all the little boys around Bethlehem, hoping that this one will be among the ones that are slaughtered. What does he see that we don't, I wonder? A threat to all the systems of power and greed, a mirror held up to evil, an unstoppable goodness. We watch and we wait. What will he tell us about all of this when he can? Will he invite us into this strange reality of his? What would that be like? Like Alice passing through the looking glass into Wonderland, or the Pevensey children through the wardrobe into Narnia? Would we even join this story if he asked us? How differently would we have to see and act to even be a part of it? Everything would have to change. Everything. We'd have to relearn what we think we know. Embracing hope and shaking hands with wonder is not something many of us have been good at lately. I'm sure it would be very strange. Maybe, dare we say it, it would be like being born again. And would he, given the chance, rewrite my story as he does these shepherds and these teenagers? I guess we'll have to wait and see. For now, we keep quiet. He's fallen asleep. So quiet now. Quiet. At the eye of the storm, you know, there's no wind, nothing moves, nothing breathes, even silence keeps silent. So hush now. Hush. There he is. There he is. Do you see him? Do you really see him? By Almighty God, brothers and sisters, open your eyes. Open your eyes and listen. The wait is almost over.